Welcome to another episode of Two Twisted Sisters, a true crime podcast. I'm Kelly.
And I'm Shauna.
And this is like our sixth episode in just like a week.
I know.
Not even a week since our last one.
I know. I'm excited.
We're actually
at some
like,
point, we should probably do this regular, like have a schedule. Because people keep saying, hey, when's your next one? And I'm like, I don't know. It's not really a good answer.
Well, it's kind of hard to really nail down a schedule because life is just so busy right now. But
yeah. This is a hobby, people. We don't get paid to do this. It's a hobby.
We are trying to pump them out when we can. So,
yeah, because it is a fun hobby. I love it. It's super fun.
Yeah, this has been really good for me. I listened to our last podcast and I upped the speed, like you said, and I was cracking up at every time we laughed.
I know. That's the funniest part. Listening to it on double speed, it's like, we sound like chipmunks or something.
It was brilliant.
It was a whole new experience. If you haven't tried it, you should try it. It's funny.
Yeah, it was definitely worth it to me. And I will never listen to that the same way. It was just funny.
It was pretty good.
All right. So Shauna, you've got our story for tonight, right?
I do.
Is it gonna top the stupidity of Dolly?
Kelly, your story last time was dumb.
It was so dumb.
It was so stupid. I think mine might be dumber. I mean, it is incredulous, really. I mean, there has to be something wrong here that we just don't know, because I cannot believe that this story could possibly happen. I mean, it's like a Stephen King novel. It's that crazy.
Well, I'm excited. I'm excited to hear it.
And what was funny is when you told your story, I was like, I'm looking. And there's dumb criminals, but your story was just like, who keeps a person in their attic? And who would be okay with that? Who would be like, oh yeah, that checks out. I'm going to go hang out in the attic for 10 years. That is just not a thing.
And then she gets with two other people who know about it and they're still like, okay, this checks out. Like, I'll still want to be with you anyway.
Sure, you're not crazy. You're not 10 kinds of psycho, but you know, I was really scrambling. I was trying to find something. And then I ran across this story and I was like, no. What? I mean, I know. But I have been listening to all sorts of documentaries and looking up all sorts of research and stuff on this, because I really had to get to the bottom of this. This was so crazy. So, okay, I'm going to tell you the story. And I want you to figure out who's the dummy, because the jury is still out.
Okay.
It's still there. Like, you're going to be like, okay, who's the dumbest one? And there's a couple of people that anyway, you'll be the judge. Okay.
Well, stupid people love stupid people and tend to attract stupid people.
Stupid is as stupid does.
Can't wait to hear that on double time.
right. So this story starts in 1934 on June 1st in Overland Park, Kansas. A bully was born.
Oh, a bully.
And his name was Ken Rex McElroy. He was number 15 out of 16 kids born to his immigrant parents.
Oh.
And let's just say he didn't quite amount to much at first. So he made it to about the eighth grade and then dropped out of school. And he kind of decided that he preferred petty crime to a formal education. He was just that kind of guy. And I read one article that said that it was reported that he didn't have a bank account. He couldn't read. He didn't even have a social security number. I don't know about that, but all I know is he just wasn't. Anyway, so eventually his family moved to this really small farming town, like a little community in Missouri called Skidmore. And I know every time I say it, I'm like, he's a bully. And all I can think of is Skidmark.
That's exactly what I thought.
I was like,
there is a Friends reference for everything.
There is.
Everything.
So that's where you grew up, was Skidmore, Missouri. That's where our story begins, and
All
it's
right.
where it ends. We're going to be there for the whole
All right.
duration. Okay. So McElroy, he was not book smart, but he was street smart. He was huge. He was over 6 feet tall when he grew up. He had big old long sideburns and dark black hair, and he's about 270 pounds. And he had been terrorizing Skidmore since he was about 13.
Wow.
So he was like the town bully. McElroy, he liked things the way he liked them, and nobody was going to change his mind on the matter. This is how he liked it. He didn't want to work, but he wanted stuff. And so he just took it. And so when he was in his teens, around about the age of 15, he would steal things like just grain or gasoline or alcohol. But as he got older, he started moving to things like antiques. And then he became this cattle rustler where he just steal livestock from his neighbors and sell it and make all this money. I mean, it was like the worst kept secret in Skidmore. Everybody knew about it. He was a thieving punk and nobody could do a thing about it. Nothing could happen. And the reason why, like if people complained, he would use his mad skills of persuasion to change their mind.
His,
he
like would beating them down until they
it was a throat puncher. His arsenal included anger, intimidation. He would stalk people. He was always carrying a gun, and he would fire his gun randomly to scare people. When he wanted to get somebody to do something, he would drive around and park outside of their home and just watch them. And then every once in a while, when he noticed that they were watching him, he would fire his gun up into the air to intimidate them. Like he was saying, this is what's going to happen to you if you say or do anything about what I want to do. And then sometimes he'd even put rattlesnakes in their mailboxes as a threat.
Is he the only guy in this place with a gun? I mean, come on.
Dude, you don't even know. Okay, so for example, in June of 1976, there was this farmer named, and I'm not naming these people, okay? This is real. His name was Romaine, as in lettuce. Romaine Henry. And Henry, he owned property out in Skidmore, and he was driving by his land, and he noticed a truck on his land. And so he got out of his truck and he was like, hey, what are you doing? And McElroy got out and he was like, hey, you're trespassing on my land. You need to get off. Well, McElroy really didn't like that. So he pulled his shotgun out and shot him twice in the gut.
Ooh.
Just because he was told to get off of his property. Shot him twice in the gut. Now, I wish that I could tell you that this was his worst crime, but it was just the beginning. In fact, I think the worst thing that he ever did was that he liked girls. And and when I say girls, I mean women who were not women yet.
Oh,
they were still girls. Yeah. And his MO was to take advantage of them and then avoid a statutory rape charge by marrying her.
No.
Yeah.
What?
So he was married. Now, there's different accounts. On one account, he was married 3 times. On another account, he was married 5 times. And he fathered anywhere from 10 to 20 kids on various women.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
Now, I'm not sure about his first wife or how he met his second wife, although I did read that his second wife was also like 14, I think, when he first met her. And her name was Alice. And he was married to her when he met 12-year-old Trina McLeod. Like I said, once McElroy decides he wants something, he goes and gets it. And he did. Now, the weird thing was Trina was apparently like enamored with McElroy. She was fine with this. And so he'd pick her up from school and drive her home and take her home and stuff. And this happened for about 2 years. And then when Trina was 14, she got pregnant. Now, she was complicit, but one day she got mad at McElroy for something. And so she went and told her parents that she had got raped. She had been raped.
Oh.
When she claimed this, obviously it was statutory rape no matter what, because she was a minor. You know, they were going to press charges. Well, McElroy, he decided that in order to avoid the charges, he would just marry her. Now, her parents weren't really down with this plan. So when they refused, he talked him into it.
What the heck?
Yeah, he talked him into it. So he decided to shoot their dog and burn down their house.
Oh, my.
So he did. And
Who
then he
is
got
not
in.
going after this guy and just shooting the
Dude.
crap out of him? Like, what? Where?
Dude.
What is happening here?
Dude. Dude. Okay. So he got his new wife, but he kept his old wife. Now he had to divorce her because that was illegal, but she lived there with them. Like Alice lived there with Trina, and it was like the weirdest little family ever. So she never moved out. He had both of them living there. And like 16 days after Trina gave birth, she and Alice and the baby went to her parents' house. And McElroy got mad about it. And so, according to court records, he like tracked him down and went in and got him and then took him back to his house. But just because he's that kind of guy, he got mad about it and he went back to her family's house. And while they were away, he shot their dog again and burned their house down again.
Oh my God.
He's the living worst.
This is the worst.
So I don't know.
I don't know if this is like the dumbest, but it's definitely like this guy's like a horrible person.
But how dumb are these people that they let him do this?
Yeah.
Nobody did anything.
Yeah,
Okay, so
that's
here's
really bizarre.
it's okay, so here's the clincher. He was charged with 21 felonies in his lifetime,
21 felonies
and
and
not
what?
once was he convicted.
What?
Yeah. So here's what happened.
Okay, as a cop's wife,
Dude.
I'm finding this really frustrating.
Oh, just wait. So the cops would arrest him. They did their job. They would arrest him every single time. They'd put him in jail, and then he would be arraigned and out on bail, and then the charges would get dropped repeatedly, like over and over again. Now, I told you he liked money, and he made money however he could, usually illegally. And he was really good at it, and it was a pretty good thing because he retained himself quite the shady lawyer. His lawyer's name was Richard McFadden, and reportedly he told people that McFadden like worked for the mob, and it was those mad skills that kept McElroy out of trouble. And it's funny, his lawyer said that he was the best client ever. He said he's reported to have quoted, "Best client I ever had. He was punctual, always said he didn't do it, paid in cash, and kept coming back." Worst lawyer ever.
What?
But the cops, I'm telling you, they tried. I mean, but inevitably the prosecution couldn't hold him because the witnesses would be too scared to testify, or they would be coerced to come in and give a false testimony. So, with the shooting with Romaine Henry, McElroy was charged with assault with intent to kill. I mean, he shot him twice in the gut, right?
Yeah.
But McFadden had filed so many motions that it was months before it ever went to trial. So during that time, McElroy did his intimidation dance over 100 times to Henry and his family. So he'd like show
What?
up to their house, he'd watch them, he'd put stuff, the snakes in his whatever, shoot his gun, totally intimidating him. What's worse, by this time, Trina was complicit with the torment and was always seen with her husband during these times, like always there. So they finally went to trial with the shooting of Romaine Henry, but McFadden, who's, that was he was the guy. Just to be sure, he somehow found two guys who testified on the stand that McElroy wasn't even there. He was in another town with them partying, so he couldn't have been trespassing and shooting people in Skidmore that day.
No.
Yeah. So there was no other evidence supporting a conviction, and he was acquitted.
How is this guy even finding friends? I don't even understand.
I'm telling you, there's coercion, there's stuff happening. So let's just recap up to this point. He's been charged with rape, arson, trespassing, theft, and assault with intent to kill for shooting a man twice. But he's never so much as spent more than one night in jail for any of these crimes. He was untouchable, and he knew
That's
it.
insane.
Yeah. And the town knew it, and they were freaking terrified of him. Like they were terrified of him. Now, this is the dumbest of all. I mean, he's been doing this since he was 13. They knew he was a thieving, pervy little skank. They knew that he was just the worst ever. But in April of 1980, it came to a head. And I'm telling you, for the dumbest reason ever. I mean, the proverbial poopy hit the oscillating device, and the mess was astronomical.
Did you just say
I did. And the catalyst for this abysmal event was a tiny piece of candy.
What?
Yeah. Beau and Lois Bowenkamp were the owners of the local general store. And one day, Trina and her 4-year-old daughter came in to get some groceries. While they were there, Trina's daughter decided to channel her inner Daddy McElroy and practice her five-finger discount skills and stole a piece of candy. Well, Lois caught her and talked with her about it in what was reported to be a pretty kind conversation. I mean, Lois even let the little girl keep the candy. I mean, she was just like, hey, you know, we don't take things without paying for it, that type of thing. Well, when she was talking to her, Trina came up on the conversation. And when she heard what happened, she lost her freaking mind. She lost her mind. I mean, she was like full on Stockholm at this point, man. Team McElroy all the way. And she was a chip off the old block. So she starts screaming at Lois and Beau, telling them that they had no idea who they were messing with and how dare they accuse her daughter of stealing. So she took her daughter and she left right after. And the Bowen camps were like, I don't know. That was weird. Okay. And they went on about their day. And about an hour later, the door slams open and there's Trina with McElroy standing behind her. And she yells, you're about to meet Ken Rex McElroy.
She did not yell that.
Yeah, that is reported that that is what she yelled.
She yelled that?
She yelled it. Okay. I mean, you got to remember she was not too, you know.
You're about to meet your maker.
So McElroy, he didn't say a word. He just stood behind her and was like, I mean, he's six feet tall guy, you know. Not that he could say anything because Trina couldn't shut her mouth. She's screaming and yelling at the Bowen camps and McElroy's just looking on like a freaking proud papa. I mean, it's like the dumbest thing ever. Mm-hmm. So after she screams herself out, they eventually leave. And Beau was like, well, crap. He knew that McElroy had shot poor old Henry twice for no freaking reason. So he's like, what the crap's he going to do to me? He wasn't wrong. Apparently, McElroy started a little small for the next few months. He and Trina followed the Bowen camps everywhere, sat outside their home, watched their house all night, shot their guns, the usual stuff. And he did this every night for like 3 months. I mean, it got so bad that Beau couldn't even do his yard work or take care of his house. Nothing. And then in July, as the intimidation was still going on, it abruptly escalated. And on this particular evening, Beau was outside of his shop waiting for a repairman to show up. But instead, McElroy showed up.
Oh.
And they started arguing and it got heated when McElroy pulled out his shotgun and shot Beau in the neck.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Beau was found not long after laying on the ground, gushing blood, and was rushed to the hospital. Now, he actually survived.
Wow. I was just going to ask that. I wondered.
Yeah, he actually did. He actually survived, barely. And it finally looked like the town bully was about to get his comeuppance. I mean, there's no way. He was arrested immediately. And it was like an open and shut case. I mean, everyone knew what had happened. They knew about the harassment. They knew about the stalking and the psychological torment over a piece of candy, by the way. Mm-hmm. And now he's laying in a hospital bed because this crazy person shot him. And to add fuel to the dumpster fire that is this story, he was even charged with the big one, attempted murder.
Wow.
This was the one. This was the one that was going to get him. I mean, it was the case that was going to clinch it. It was a no-brainer.
And then it doesn't.
Ugh. Good old McElroy.
Somebody just kill him.
I know. Kill him.
I'm telling you, if this were Sean, he'd be like, nah. Like, you come in my house and we're going to have an issue. You'll be dead. You'll be dead.
So McElroy spends the night in jail, posts bail, and he's out on the next day.
There's no freaking way. That's crazy.
Yeah. And then he's found in his favorite bar, the D&G Tavern, bragging about how he's never going to get convicted for this. McFadden's pulling his usual crap, pushing back the trial for months and months, all the while McElroy's starting his regiment back up. Intimidate, bully, rattlesnake, rinse, repeat. So over and over.
Rattlesnake, rinse, repeat.
Rattlesnake, rinse, repeat.
We're going to have to use that from now on. That's what I should have used in my first story.
Yeah, that's right. Rinse, repeat. At this point, you might be wondering, what exactly would it take to put this guy away? I mean, the town is wondering the same thing. They're like, what the
I know
heck?
exactly what it would take.
You do know what it would take.
I know what it would take.
So get this. So they're so fed up at this point. The town members approach the town marshal. His name is Dave Dunbar. And they're like, dude, you got to help. You got to track him down. You got to put him in jail. You got to do something. So he's like, yeah, I got this. No problem. Right. Yeah, so he tracks McElroy down and he's like, hey, dude, you know, I'm ready to bring you in. McElroy pulls out his trusty gun and threatens Dunbar with it. And Dunbar, being the super awesome law enforcement officer that he is, promptly turns around and says, well, that's all I got. And then he left town.
What?
Yeah, he just left. He's like, well, that's about all I can do.
Okay, he's the dummy in this story. I've decided. Because if somebody came out, threatened me with a gun, I'd be like, okay, here's mine. And like, threaten him right back. Or actually
he's
made good
marshal.
On it. Like,
what
the actual crap is wrong with this guy?
He's a marshal. And he's just like, yep, nope, okay, thanks. Thanks for playing. And then he turns around and leaves. And McElroy just walks off. Easy peasy, lemon squeezy. I mean, he didn't get busted for pulling a gun on an officer, nothing. He just, okay. This is the 1980s. It was not that long ago. Like, for real?
This is insane. I have to look this guy up.
I'm telling you.
Does it have
I'm
a
telling
picture
you, Kelly.
Of him?
Yeah.
Ken McElroy?
Ken Rex McElroy. It looks like McElroy, but it's pronounced McElroy. I think it's funny that his last name is McElroy and his lawyer's McFadden and his wife is McLeod.
Yeah, this is just crazy to me.
I know.
Okay,
so
continue.
Again, it's hard to tell who's the dumbest one in the story. Like, it just gets worse. So at this point, the cops are crazy frustrated. No one can do anything to McElroy. No matter what he's charged with, he gets out of jail. He continues to terrorize the town. Get this. It was so bad that when the townspeople approached the sheriff, he was reported to say, look, if anyone shoots him, just let us know and we'll come and get the body before he starts smelling.
Oh, like nobody would even charge them. They'd just
nobody.
Be like...
I mean, it was because they couldn't do anything but throw him in jail because it was up to the lawyers and the prosecution to do something. And his lawyer was slicker than snot on a greasy hot plate, and nothing was sticking. I'm like, come on.
Analogies are really like
spot on, aren't they?
Spot on tonight. Okay.
Anyway, so it's almost a full year after the shooting. McElroy finally goes to trial. That's how crazy his lawyer is. So instead of being found guilty of attempted murder, he is actually convicted of second degree assault.
That's it?
That's it. So let me put this in perspective. First degree assault means assault that can seriously injure or kill someone. Second degree assault is assault that causes physical harm, but not serious enough to be considered life-threatening.
What?
So apparently getting shot point blank in the neck, you know, where your major artery is to the blood flow to the brain, is not considered life-threatening.
What?
Okay. Dumb, right? Now, so I don't know. They're all drinking the Kool-Aid. They're all from the shallow end of the gene pool. Maybe there's, I don't know what's happening in Skidmore, but they are dumber than a box of rocks. I'm telling you. I don't understand what's happening here. So what happens next was the lighter fluid that turned this dumpster fire into a flaming floating garbage boat of craptasticness.
I wish I could be in your mind sometimes when you come up with it.
Oh, instead of going straight to jail because it was second degree assault, he was allowed to post bail and go free while McFadden filed endless appeals, which could take years to resolve.
Wait a minute.
Do you
just
see?
Stop here. He was tried and
charged, convicted.
Tried and convicted, and he still got out? What's the criteria for actually needing to go to jail? I don't understand this. Like, why aren't they literally throwing him in jail and throwing away the key? I don't get this.
I don't either. But this is what happened. So he was good to go, free as a bird. And he promptly went back to the D&G tavern with his wife, Trina, and a rifle, which he brandished in the tavern while boasting about how he was going to go finish the job on poor Bowen Camp. So you can imagine, townspeople, they're done. They are done at this point. No, they're done.
Are they?
So the next day, July 10th, 1981, over 30 of the townspeople meet at the town hall because they got to figure out what the crap they're going to do about this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the sheriff is there and he's like, guys, come on, here are your options. You can form a town watch or you can run them out of town. Well, the town's like, well, that's a crap idea. In fact, they didn't like that idea at all. And they thought that idea could go die. So the sheriff.
What we think of your idea.
It can go die. It could go die right now. So the sheriff was like, so we're cool? Okay, cool. So my work here is all done. So he gets in his car and he leaves. I mean, he left town. Like he got in his car and he left town.
So like nobody just wanted to actually deal with this guy.
No. Look. He was smart. He knew that nothing good was about to happen. And I'm pretty sure that he knew that had he been around, he would likely have to arrest some good people. So he just took a drive.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
He's like, this is what you need to do. You can form a town watch or you can run him out of town. Are we good? Okay. Well, I'm going to go now.
Yeah. You do you. And I'll be back when it's over.
Let me know how things go. So he leaves town. So just then the crowd finds out that McElroy and Trina are chilling at the bar again. So they're like, they mosey right on over and they enter the bar and they basically do the, this town ain't big enough for the both of us speech. And they were not backing down. And I think that even McElroy was, even though he was illiterate, I think even he could see that he was outnumbered at least 15 to 1. So he and Trina were like, we should go. So they left the bar and they go and get into his truck. Now, I think that the town realizes in this moment that they had pretty much drawn a line in the sand. And that although McElroy was outnumbered here, he would get his revenge. And no one knew where or when it was going to happen. And they were done. So they called it. Four gunshots were heard, and the town collectively looked away. Just, oh, what's that? Huh. And they're surrounding the truck at this point. The townspeople followed McElroy and Trina out, surrounding the truck, and all of a sudden, four gunshots are heard. And when the dust settles, McElroy is slumped over the steering wheel, foot on the gas, with his insides now displayed spectacularly on his outsides. And during the whole thing, Trina was grabbed by several men and taken to a nearby bank for safety. So that's the scene. He's sitting there. He's slumped over. Yeah. Luckily, it's still in park because his foot's on the gas. Yeah. And the townspeople, they don't call anybody. They don't call the cops. They don't call 911. They just turn around, get in their cars, and leave. They don't check on him. I mean, no one did anything. And when the cops finally came, and I think it was like an hour later, the cops finally came. He was still sitting there, slumped over the steering wheel with his foot on the gas.
Well, I mean.
And there wasn't another soul there. The only evidence that they ever had was some shell casings from a .22 caliber rifle and an 8mm Mauser. I mean, the guns were never found, just the shell casings. And that's it. No one said they saw anything. No one said anything. Nothing.
Yeah.
At all.
I don't blame them.
I mean, but listen, there was one suspect named Dale Clement who was identified by Trina. She swears she saw him go get a gun and he was at the town hall meeting and he was at the bar, but so were 30 other people. So it's like there was, I mean, nobody could identify anybody who had done anything. Nobody saw anything. And eventually they brought in the FBI because they felt that the sheriff had been in on it since he left the, you know, he was just like, hey,
well, I'm going to go now.
You know, I mean, so they thought, well, maybe he was complicit. I don't know. The case went to a grand jury and they heard the evidence, air quotes, evidence. And they were like, nah, there's nothing here. Nothing. Eventually, Trina actually sued the sheriff, the mayor, and Dale Clement to the tune of about $6 million.
Oh.
Yeah. The case was eventually settled out of court for $17,000.
$17,000.
17 grand. I mean, she got her money and she left. And the documentary that I saw said that they were like bullied. The family was bullied and stuff like that. But they just, daddy was wonderful. He was such a great guy.
Oh,
I mean, we had a cry every once in a while, but it wasn't bad. And Kelly, it's been 41 years and no one is talking. No one has said a word. It's still it's still an open case and the town won't say a word.
I wouldn't say a word. Like, I mean,
nothing. Isn't that, you would think in a town of 400 people that somebody would have been, I don't know, murder. Maybe we shouldn't have done that. I'm going to say something. It's tight as a clam. Nobody's saying anything.
That's
nothing.
Crazy.
Isn't it? It's crazy. Everyone knows it. Everyone knows that the town, even the lawyer was like, this town committed murder and he's not wrong. Everybody knows it, but nobody can prove it.
It's like that. What is that? The Oriental Express or something?
Yeah. Or the, yeah, murder on the Orient Express or Orient. Yeah.
Everybody had a reason to kill him and everybody killed him.
And everybody killed him.
And nobody said a thing.
And nobody said a thing. There was a Stephen King show that my husband and I love to watch called Storm of the Century. And it's, I'm not going to tell you the plot, but basically the town has to make a decision on something and it's a terrible decision. And it's like, they keep this secret of what happened during this storm for forever. It's like small towns keep secrets. Yeah. And you think it's like this kitschy saying, you know, small towns keep secrets, but I was just like, holy fetch, small towns keep secrets.
For reals, man.
I mean, everybody knew. Like, the whole town got together, witnessed this guy get murdered, and they were like, well, it's a Tuesday. Okay. And then they went back to work. Right?
But here's the thing, like, I mean, if you were in that situation, like, what else could there have been done about this? Like, what else could have been done about the situation, you know?
Well, I
like, it had
that.
To have ended that way, you know?
I typically follow the Judeo-Christian tenet of thou shalt not kill, but that's just me.
I agree.
I mean, I was listening to this going, oh my gosh, would somebody shoot him already? Like, yeah. He is raping girls. Like, he's a pedophile. He's a terrible person. He's burning things down. He's shooting people, like flat out shooting people. I mean, he is the worst. At what point, you know, what kind of technicalities are they getting him off on that he's not going to jail? And so I mean, I would say that had this happened this would never have happened in Texas. Or Florida. I mean, it never would. You know this because everybody
there's no way this would happen in Texas.
Are you kidding?
That guy would have been dead.
I know, right?
Way longer.
If Romaine Henry lived in Texas, he would have been like, hold my beer. I'm going to grab my gun and I'm going to shoot you back, you know?
Yep.
But I guess in Missouri, they just are like, okay, never mind. I'll just lay here and bleed.
Lay here and bleed.
That's what they did. I'll just lay here and bleed. Man. So I don't know. It's stupid. It's so stupid that it's stupid the way the townspeople acted for so long. It's stupid that the marshal just walked off. It's stupid that the government couldn't hold him for any reason and they allowed the lawyer to do. I mean, it was like there was dumb and dumber and dumbest and dumb and did them dumb dumb. And I'm just, it just keeps getting dumber.
I don't know if it was stupidity or if it was just really clever. I don't know. I can't say that this was dumb. It's crazy.
For sure. Don't you go there.
No, I honestly been thinking about how you were telling the story and I was like, man, this guy sucks. I don't know if this is like a dumb story, if it's just off the wall crazy that this even happened. It just seems like the craziest.
Dude, over a piece of candy, second degree assault. The guy shot in the neck. And the marshal who is like, hey, buddy, come here. Oh, you got a gun? Never mind. My bad. Like, you're the marshal.
Yeah. So crazy.
I don't know. It's really bizarre.
It's bizarre. Yeah. See? It's bizarre.
Really,
And they're still just like, nah, we don't know what happened.
They all know what happened. It's just nobody can prove anything. It's still an open case, and they're still investigating stuff, but nobody will talk. And I watched a four or five hour documentary on it. And they're even now saying that because the town made this decision, that it has cursed them. They say that the town is haunted now because all of these terrible things keep happening. Like people who, yeah, it's really bizarre. You have to look it up.
The town is haunted? That's
the
crazy.
The town is haunted.
What is this town?
Huh?
How big is this town?
There's now only about 200 people there. Like it used to be almost, yeah. There's only about 200 people there now. Yeah, it's really little.
You can't even live in a town like that.
I grew up in a town like that.
That's crazy. Yeah, but you stopped living there.
I did stop living there. And that right there is the answer. So if you live in a town where there's a bully who gets away with crap, I'd be like,
okay, bye.
See ya, homies. I'm out. There are other towns in the world. There's other towns in the state. There's other towns in the county, for corn's sake. Why would you stay? I'd be like, let's leave this crazy person. I'm out, man.
Yeah, that's nuts to me. I really would have been like, okay, bye. I'm not staying here.
That's what I'm saying. Like they said, their only option was to kill him. And I understand that I'm sure it was rough, but
maybe it was just like, I mean, looking at it on paper, seeing how rough it was, like, I can't imagine being the people that were actually experiencing it and knowing that nothing could be done. If he'd been charged that many times with that many things and literally kept getting back out, I mean, collectively, I'd be like, what else could we do? You know, and I'm not sitting here condoning because I agree, like, thou shalt not kill, but like, what else could you have done in that situation? Like, that guy's clearly not going to stop. There's clearly nothing that's helping this. I get it.
Well, the irony is that in the documentary that I saw, they said that if anyone had come forward, that they would have been exonerated. It would have been called a justifiable murder.
Yeah.
That they would not have gone to jail for that. But nobody's saying a thing. And I don't blame them. I'd have been like, clearly, even from the grave, this guy would win. Like if I told you, okay, never mind. Yeah, it was me. You know, I was the only one not touching my nose. 1, 2, 3, not me. Oh, crap. Yes, it was my 22.
That's funny.
You know, I think you live that long with a person that gets away with that much crap.
Yeah.
There's almost a stigma, you know, there's almost like a, no wonder they feel like the town is haunted or affected, that, you know, when you have 400 people that know about something and they're hush hush and they're not going to say anything because it's better than the alternative was, it affects you, you know, and for it to turn into what it did, there's got to be some sort of a stigma where you think that something is going to happen to screw you from the grave, because that's what happens. McElroy's just that kind of guy.
Right. Well, I'll give you that. That's probably been the craziest one that I've heard in a while. I mean, it had a lot of dumb things about it, but it was just crazy more than dumb. Honestly, was it really as dumb as a lady convincing a guy to live in her attic and kill her husband for over 10 years and not get caught?
You know, something,
and the fact
that
he did it.
Okay, this, here's
what,
here's
two what, other, three other men to be with her after the fact.
I'll concede this time. I'll concede. I think it's my turn to concede. Because yours was pretty stupid. Yours was pretty stupid. But I will contend that this is an insane story. Like,
I agree.
Who does any of this?
I agree 100%. Like,
if I had not looked it up and researched the crap out of it, I would not have believed it. I didn't believe it at first. I was like, this is fake news. This is fake news. I call BS.
That's funny.
Not today, Satan.
I will give you that. It is insane. It's crazy, but not quite as dumb.
Yeah.
It's so dumb.
Since that is the... that is the thing this time, I'll concede to you. You got the dumb. Unless our avid listeners
now
want to dispute that. Which, if you'd like to dispute that, you can go on Apple Podcasts and leave us a review and rate our podcast.
Leave us a review. I'm so excited that we're on Apple. That's so awesome.
I feel legit. I feel like kind of cool that we're on Apple.
Cool now. We're on Apple.
We're special.
Good. But yeah, follow us on there. Leave us a review. Give us a rating.
Tell us if you want to hear something. Tell us about some cool stories. If you want to hear a cool story, tell us. And I think we're going to have a guest speaker on in a few weeks, right, Kelly?
Yeah, we'll have to coordinate it with my sister-in-law. She's amazing. She is a really amazing storyteller. So I'm kind of excited about that. But I'll have to coordinate it with her a little more and see when she wants to do that. So
I'm excited.
It'll be good.
What should we do next?
Ooh, I don't know.
I got Halloween coming up.
Yeah, we do. We got to do a spooky one.
We do have to do spooky ones. Okay. Spooky ones are the next ones.
All right. So the competition next time will be who has the spookiest story.
Okay. I like it. Hey, listen to that one at double speed.
I don't know what noises we just came up with, but they're special. So yeah, there's that. All right, people, keep it twisted, but not so twisted that you bully an entire town and, like, you know, get away with it
and get shot in the street.
Get shot, and then nobody says anything, and then your murder just goes unsolved for forever, and you know nobody cares.
That's right. So
don't be that guy.
Don't be that guy. Just be the marshal. Just walk away, man.
Just walk away.
Just walk away.
Turn the other cheek.
I'm out. That's all I got. Did my darndest. His gun was bigger
than
mine.
It's like that SpongeBob episode where they're stuck in Sandy's like hibernation deal and they're trying to get out the door and Patrick comes and he's like, open sesame. Well, I've done all I can.
I love that episode.
It's the only episode I've ever remembered. And all I remember of it is, well, I've done all I can. And
he's done all I can. It's like, good job, Patrick. that was our lovely Marshall. Done all I can. I'm out. Awesome.
Okay, you can cut that last part out.